Welcome to Mysteries, Myths, and More. I'm your narrator, Joyce Keller Walsh. My intention is to use this podcast to tell a story each month, sometimes fiction, sometimes not, that I hope you'll find interesting, engaging, and provocative.
March 2024, episode 22. As promised in my last episode, I'm going to tell you an Irish story. I'm not actually Irish. Walsh is my husband's surname. But my mother's lineage includes some Scottish ancestry, equally Celtic, and both nationalities probably descended from the Vikings. I traveled to Ireland once with my husband John to his ancestral home in Templetown in the county of Wexford. Templetown, once the 12th century headquarters of the Knights Templar, is located on what is called Hook Head, a small peninsula that juts out into the Waterford Harbor. The phrase by hook or by crook is attributed, perhaps apocryphally, to Oliver Cromwell's vow in the 17th century to invade Ireland by a Hook Head on the Wexford side or by the village of Crook on the Waterford side. When we were there some 20 or so years ago, there were only two significant institutions in Templetown, the local pub and the medieval church ruins. We, of course, went to the pub, and there we found a traditional wake going on with singing and dancing, and as John hoped, we also found his last living relative, Uncle Bump. There's a little bit more about that in my podcast number 6, if you're interested. But there were two other experiences we had in Templetown, one strange and the other amazing. Upon our arrival in Templetown in the evening, we found our way to Loftus Hall to see for ourselves the place of the famous myth. The original hall, which sits overlooking Waterford Harbor, was built in the 1600s. It's been since renovated and has a new name, but when we were there, it was still known for an eerie legend. As the story goes, a stranger appeared at the hall one night during a storm, and he asked for lodging. He was invited in, and during the following evenings, he joined the Tottenham family in card games. One evening, however, young Lady Anne Tottenham dropped a card on the floor, and when she went down to pick it up, she saw that, in place of feet, the stranger had the cloven hooves of the devil. When he realized that she'd seen what he was, the devil flew up through the roof in a ball of fire. According to the tale, Lady Anne went mad and was locked up in the house until her death. Her ghost was said to haunt the hall ever after. Downstairs in the hall when we were there was a small public bar. There was no one there. We sat at the bar and waited for service. Shortly after, a middle-aged woman came in and scowled at us as she took our drinks order. She asked who we were, and when John gave his name, she continued to be quite frosty towards us. Then she turned to me. "Who are your people?" she asked. I was going to give my father's surname, Keller, but then I thought she would probably be more interested in my mother's, so I said that my maternal family is Macaulay. Suddenly, she brightened up and became friendly towards us, engaging in conversation for the rest of the time we were there. We weren't sure at first what brought on the change in attitude. Later on, as we were walking back to our bed and breakfast, we thought we'd figured it out. Walsh's would have been green, and the Macaulay's would have been orange. Did the proprietors favor the Protestant orange Irish? We had a lot of speculations about that. However, we did not see any ghosts. The other unusual experience we had there took place after we went to the pub the next day. John inquired about the gravesite of his ancestors in the churchyard across the street. The publican told us that the graves were moved around, but that the man who could show us where they were was right there at the wake. Indeed, the graveskeeper led us to the cemetery next to the crumbling stone church and showed us where the Walshes, John's great-grandparents, were buried. As we walked back, the pub owner came racing out and shouted to John that his relative was there. Thinking he meant Uncle Bump, we said we'd already seen him. "No," the publican said. "This is another relative." When we went inside, John was introduced to a man named Kevin Walsh and his son Simon, who had come that afternoon to see their last remaining relative, Uncle Bump. Kevin and John had never heard of each other, but as we sat at a table in the back of the pub, they traced their ancestors back to their grandparents, who were brothers. During the potato famine, one of the brothers emigrated to England, where Kevin and his family lived, and his brother, John's grandfather, emigrated to America. The bizarre coincidence is that Kevin had only been to Templetown once before and was only going to be there for this one afternoon. John, too, had only been to Templetown once before, and we were only going to be there for this one afternoon before we left. We kept in touch with Kevin for years afterwards and visited his family in Barnstaple, England. Kevin has since died, but the coincidence of our meeting with him on the only time we would ever be in Ireland remains a most inexplicable occurrence. None of this has anything to do with the following, but I'm claiming my bona fides to tell this story called Willie for Home. At the turning end of a dark country path, a modest worn cottage comes into view out of the trees like a bashful child peeking from a doorway. The cottage needs repair, not so much as to suggest indifference on the part of the owners, certainly not that, but recent neglect, to be sure. Still warm from the day's sun, the autumn evening is cooling now, and the lights in the cottage, every one, are shining a beacon on the drive. Irish folk music, heard distantly at the curve of the path, now envelops the figure as he walks towards the invitation. It brings a quickening to his breath, and he pauses a moment to compose himself. Now and then he hears bursts of laughter and the melodic risings and fallings of lively conversation. It's a young man in a homespun, cable-knit ivory sweater who walks the paved path. The sweater fits tightly over his muscled arms and chest, and is threadbare at the elbows. His tweed woolen pants are somewhat baggy about the knees and seat, but it is the jaunty red Donegal cap that he's proud of, newly bought for the occasion. As he masters his breath and plunges forward, there is resolve in his step. His boots are scuffed at the toes, but sturdy. His step quickens. Soon he reaches the cottage, stops to listen to the voices, and smiles a long-come smile, which all too quickly retreats into a tightening of the lips and a furrow in the brow. He knocks loudly, thick bare knuckles against the weathered door. The sounds inside immediately cease. After a moment, the door opens, and an older woman is framed by the bright inside glow. Her silhouette is so thin that her simple dress seems totally without contours. She must be in her 60s, a country woman with her gray streaked hair tightly pulled back into a bun. Her black dress and thick-heeled shoes are her party best. There is no abundance about her. Even her eyebrows are sparse. She scrutinizes the young man with a cold assessment. "Aye, Willie," she acknowledges, without a hint of surprise or welcome. "I come to see my doll," Willie says, as he removes his new cap, holding it to his chest like a supplicant. Yet he cannot help bouncing on his heels with anticipation. He's not receiving. But it's his birthday night. He's not receiving, I say. Go from us, Willie. The young man is not to be put off, after waiting for so long for his opportunity. "I come from such a distance, don't you know? From New York City, just for this night. 10 years it is I seen him. I need to see him." The woman shakes her head. "But I need to see him." She looks about to reply, then tilts her head back, never taking her eyes off him. "No. I hear the music. I know you're celebrating. I know his voice. I hear his Killarney rise over the others the way Black Pirate used to take the fence over to Kelly's." He gestures a soaring motion with his hand, and her eyes follow it. "I've missed the old stallion, Ma. Let me pay my respects. I never lost track. I marked his birthdays every year since. I'd have a pint and a shot and wish him pardon me for a wastrel. Won't he see me, Ma?" Bouncing still. "Why would he see you? You're a stranger to this house. Worse than a stranger." She spits to the ground by his feet. "Enemy." Willie ceases bouncing and studies her poor naked face. "I'm your flesh, Ma." The woman, who has seemed almost inanimate, leers at him. "My flesh? My elimination is what you are. I carried you in my bowels, not my belly." The young Willie drops his hand with the new red cap. "Do you think I'm without shame?" he responds softly. But the woman rocks in the doorway. "Without God's conscience is what you are. Do you think I haven't cursed myself? When she says nothing, he looks beyond her into the house, but she moves to bar his way. He flares. Whatever worms are in my heart, old woman, they were bred there, not born. I wasn't born to leave home. He drove me to it. I would never become a free man, hadn't I run. I'd have spent all my best here on this rough patch of unforgiving land. Never see the world and tempt myself with other ways of knowing things. That's what he wanted of me. That's what, to live and die under his thumb. Liar, she shouts, flinging it in his face. Thief! You stole your own father's purse, and you stole his pride and his son, his only son, his continuity. You stole... She lets it hang there in the night, replacing the music. Go from us. I come to make it right, Ma. 10 years, and you think you can make it right, thief? His voice takes on a pleading note. Please let me in. I have his purse, more than I took. I've done him well. I didn't run so far or fly beyond reach. I only went to America. I tried to get a decent job, but they don't want Irish. But they'll take us on the docks. I work the docks, and I do good. I'm a stevedore. Every week I put a little away. It took a long time. It took my appetite. But I've got his purse. I've got Pa's money, and then some. Please let me in. I want it to be over. The stiffness in her spine relaxes. Is it sympathy or tiredness? He can't tell. Why didn't you write? She says softly. Say what? I'm sorry, Pa, I'm sorry. Does that buy him the cow he wanted? Or the boiler? Does that buy him his son back? I'm sorry. Please, Ma, let me in. Her head bends and her eyes drift inside. Your father's friends, they all think you went to war. Everyone here thinks you went to war. It's what your father told them. Then tell them the war's over and I'm back. Nobody knows any different. I won't belie him, Ma. I went to war in a battleship and patrolled the Atlantic. That's what I did. I just want to see Pa. Talk to him for me, please, Ma. I only did it because I had to. Her head stretches back and her body becomes taut once more, like the snap of a whip. Had to? Had to sneak into your father's closet when he was out of the house? Had to steal his savings like a common raider? Had to leave him wondering where you were that night and the next day and the next night until finally we knew you'd gone? And to cast the seed of doubt as to how you'd gone? Hating ourselves for even thinking we'd steal from your own. Willie falls back a step from the gale force of her anger. Your father wouldn't look in that closet for a week because he didn't want to betray you. And when it had to come, and he opened the door and reached his hand onto the top shelf in a dark corner, and his fingers found nothing but dust, he let out a sound, dear God, that sucked the air from my lungs, so pitiful. Haunts me to my grave, that sound. That's what you had to do, wretch? For what? You tell me what is worth that. Willie's eyes fill with tears. I heard it. That sound. From a million miles away. And was it worth it, son? She seethes. The word son is like a body blow to him. No, he cries and sinks slowly to one knee. Please, Ma, forgive me. It's not for me to forgive. Without lifting his head, Willie pleads. Talk to Pa for me. Intercede for me, Ma. I'll make it up to both of you, I promise. Wait here, she murmurs as she disappears inside. Willie remains on his knees until she returns. Forever, it seems. Will he see me? He looks only at those thick-heeled shoes. You can come. The music begins anew with a lilting tune. A flute carries the melody. Willie looks up at her. His cheeks glisten from tears. Come then. She stands beside the door. Thank you, Ma, he says, with a catch in his voice. Willie rises and takes a deep breath as he looks through the doorway towards the lighted room. Go into the party, she says. But her voice has an edge that makes Willie hesitate. Go ahead, she urges. And as Willie starts forward, she keens into his ear. Yes, go to your father's wake. Willie drops his red cap from his slim fingers. On his face is the look of defeat. This is a story I wrote many years ago and forgot about until I began doing the Swedish death cleaning, as it's fondly called, sorting out clothes, books, and papers that seem to reproduce endlessly. I found that discarding junk is very cathartic. I eliminated a lot of paperwork this way. But I saved this story, and I hope it was worth saving. For my next episode, I'm planning to talk about St. Louis and a timely novel he wrote. Meanwhile, thank you for listening.
If you like this podcast, please download and subscribe. It's free, and you'll find it on your favorite directories such as Apple, Google, Stitcher, TuneIn, and more. To learn more about me and my books, go to joycewalsh.com.